Some of those things still pertain today. That is, if you were to transfer the land in trust into federal trust, it would still be subject to a certain measure of BIA supervision and restrictions.
Right.
Any comments on that whole dispute and the history of it?
Well, it's very clear under existing law that it's impossible to take ANCSA lands into trust, have tribes take ANCSA lands into trust, or have the federal government take ANCSA lands into trust on behalf of a tribe. Obviously, that possibility is obviously clearly precluded by ANCSA, because it's right there in the policy statement of the law, right, you know, right at the beginning. So that would take that would be a major amendment to the intent of ANCSA. I think that the possibility of transfers to tribes, land transfers to tribes, should be investigated and pursued. If that in fact is the will of the people, if that is in fact is the method that they want to use to protect the lands for the future, then it'll happen. But I think there's going to have to be everybody's going to have to understand the terms and the options that are available. And I don't know what the scenario is for the legislative strategy for approaching Congress. I think that the so-called leaders are going to have to go back and figure out what the people at the local level and local communities want. And it's not going to be one overall solution. There's a lot of issues that really aren't 1991 issues. Taxation, that's an issue right now. We could be taxed right now. We could lose our land right now. Chiatica Inc. could lose our land right now. ALP, we had a loan to help finance the hotel. That hasn't been paid. We're dickering, arguing about how much we owe and what the interest rate, how the interest rate should track from the beginning of the loan. So they go ahead and they unilaterally top file on our whole ownership over there on the Admiralty. So we could lose all the land right now. And the children that have been born since 1971, I think that to me that's the strongest argument for transferring resources to a tribe, because the children can become full-fledged members of a tribe, and it's an ongoing process. It's continually renewing. A tribe continually renews itself because it's based on enrollment and tribal membership. I think there's possibilities right now with existing law, without any major amendments, that would provide benefits to those children right now. The joint venture that I talked about last night, in which a Native corporation leases land to a tribe for nothing, and then has the tribe undertake all of the infrastructure development, and then enters into enterprises. Hopefully the enterprises would make money, you know, directly chartered by the tribe. And the scenario that I would like to look at is to incorporate all of the Native corporation members, at least give them an option or some type of interest in those business enterprises, some type of shares, so that they would be getting benefits, and then open it up to the children too, you know, the rest of the enrolled members of the tribe. It would have to be worked out between the corporations and the tribes, the specific terms of that type of venture. But if a corporation isn't getting a gainful return on a lease, it's not subject to taxation under the amended state taxation statutes that went into effect January 1st of this year. And those are specifically for ANCSA lands. And the development, they redefined development before, you know, if you were putting in a water sewer system or electrical system or a road, a state chartered municipality could interpret that to be a development and go in and start taxing the hell out of it. But now that does not constitute development under the revised definition of development under that state ANCSA taxation law. So those are some of the things that we're trying to do under existing law as far as cooperating, cooperative ventures between the tribe and the Native Corporation. We've been successful in this little piece of land across the channel. This is the only land that we have in, you know, near the Sitka urban area. We're putting in a brand new water and sewer system with the Indian Health Service Environmental Health Branch funding, and we renovated about 32 buildings over there with a block grant from Department of Housing and Urban Development, and we're putting in a new electrical system over there too. So eventually we'll get to the stage where we can hopefully be running some successful businesses and turning back some dividends to the whoever are the shareholders of this tribal enterprise. And hopefully that the shareholders of that tribal enterprise will include the children that are born, that have been born since 1971. Three of my four children were born after 1971. I think the other complicating factor on land transfers is the small matter of 7I, the 7I distribution agreement that was entered into by the regional corporations, and the separation of ownership of the surface from the subsurface. I guess there are legal methods by which the village and urban corporations could totally restrict the regions from developing the subsurface if they wanted to, but you kind of hate to see polarization of that sort, that type. It's much better if the regions and the villages and the urban corporations were cooperating. But I think that's one of the agendas of ANCSA, is the polarization and between the regions and the villages. But that's a major problem that will have to be dealt with in any kind of land transfer, because you have no control over the subsurface.
Well, thank you very much for the books and for these documents relating to the Sierra Club and the statement made with regard to Secretary Clark's remarks. I think the Commission has already received the 1985 materials at its office in Anchorage, so I don't think we should deprive you of this copy.
Yeah, it's surprising how well it came out. I was surprised anyway. I know AFN Incorporated tried to directly control the recommendations and the study itself. They called the BIA Central Office people to the carpet, and they dutifully appeared at the AFN board meeting in Anchorage last October to apologize to AFN for contracting with Management Concepts. UTA somebody in UTA shot through a resolution bad-mouthing management concepts too, but I didn't know about that. But anyway, I think the study came out fairly well for the, you know, less than a year. I think they did a fairly good job. I'll keep it down here, you know, for anybody who wants to look at it today and tonight.
Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Hope. Else like to make a presentation this afternoon? It's a good time since
my name's Bob Sam, and I'm a Sciatica shareholder, and fairly young, so, and it was real interesting last night when I came in and listened to the history of the land claims and how it started here in Southeast. It's nice to know that it wasn't just an overnight thing, it's something that's been in the process for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. It's nice to know that a lot of planning went into it. I only hope that this kind of planning can continue on with the younger people 10 years, 20 years from now, that we can all sit down and sit in a room and work out our differences and walk out of that room and still be family. Yeah, and I'm saying that because I spent all my life here in Sitka, realizing that I'm from Sitka, and then I also have family in Angoon that I'm also real close to. And I hope that we can all sit down and work out our differences no matter what, and come together in some kind of compromise, because I do a lot of traveling out there now, and I spend a lot of time in villages, and particularly Angoon, with family out there. And I'm beginning to get to know them, and they treat me as family out there, and I get the same kind of treatment here in Sitka, and that we should be aware that we have family. You know, that those ties are there long before this land claims ever came about. But that's something that I hope that will continue happening, that these strong family and tribal ties will remain strong, and that we don't fight among each other. And, you know, we need to sit down and debate these issues. You know, I'm a Sciatica shareholder, but I have family in Angoon. You know, and that kind of sticks me in a right in the middle of things sometimes, and I still like to go to Angoon, and I really feel that being out there, it's not, you know, the people out there don't think of Sitka as bad, you know, the majority of, you know, it's just a few people doing these things, I think, that, and it's the same with Sitka, there's just a few native people out there doing things when there's not that much shareholder relationship kind of things, you know, getting involved, getting more shareholders involved and getting the whole community involved rather than just a select few. And that's my feeling, is that the land claims didn't address the whole. Only a select few were involved in it. Only a select few kept things going. And even at times when the majority of the people didn't care, there was always that select few who did. I know people today, before the land claims, they didn't care whether they were native or not. You know, they had no desire to go back to being a native person. That land claims came around, our enrollment went up. You know, people wanted to be native again. I think that's good. You know, we have a strong enrollment and more people identify with who they are, and they're getting to realize that we have something that nobody else has, and that's ourselves. You know, we have strong ties with this land. We have strong ties with people, and we have family. We know where we come from. But things that have been coming out in the open, drugs, alcohol, is another part of it that this power and greed, land and money, you know, more drugs, more alcohol. Got money. I have never really felt comfortable watching Native leaders drink and use drugs, because they are representing our people. And when they go to conventions and big meetings in other areas, it just bothered me. And I work for human resource. You know, I like working with human resources. I like hearing things about developing human resources. I like that. I like listening to that kind of stuff. You know, our children are our greatest resource. Our elders are our greatest resource. That's the stuff I like to hear, you know, the feelings kind of what it's like to be a native, you know, and what it's that we have a spirit, we have strong ties with the land. You know, I haven't been too involved with land claims and profit-making corporations, but my feeling is that we just can't stagger to self-determination. We have to look within ourselves and find out how we really feel. So I'm sticking with human resources. You know, I feel very optimistic about our future. We have a very wonderful future, and I really feel that we need to take it on our own. We should and can be responsible for our own lives. You know, so part of my life is with working with human resources, you know, with Native people, and getting them to feel proud of themselves. I could have been more involved with this corporations and stuff, but I it wasn't until I put down that bottle, until I put down those drugs, that I learned more about self-determination than I ever have. And that's something that came within myself. You know, I've learned that I can make it out in that world myself if I feel comfortable with myself. I think self-determination comes within the heart and within the nativeness, and it's nothing that comes from an outside place. It's how we feel about ourselves. And that's self-determination for me. But the land claims didn't address self-determination. It created business corporations, and we can't rely that our whole lives on business corporations. Our tribal government, our tribal lands, we can't rely that on a business corporation. We could lose. Businesses come and go every day. Yeah, they. So. For me, I'm going to stick with human resources and young people. Because long after that land claims money is gone, we're going to still be here. Yeah, we're gonna still be alive, and we're still going to be kicking around Alaska. And it's up to us to figure out what we're going to do with the younger people. You know, they figure in 1991, something like 40,000 Alaska Natives will be ineligible for the land claims because they were born after 1971. That's quite a few people, and we need to do something. You know, I thought we live in a culture where we think of our future. You know, we think of our children. Everything we do is for the children, and we need to go back to that kind of thought. You know, our children comes first. You know, I don't mind not seeing any benefits. I do mind that the children see some, and our elderly people see some. I've learned to live on my own. I've learned to be on my own. But I think we need to know who we are, where we came from, and to deal with our problems, our own selves, without having people outside come in telling us how to do stuff. I think we can do it ourselves, and that's, you know, we need to take on our own responsibility for our own lives and be responsible for our own lives. Whether it's a land claims or tribal government or any organization, A and B, I feel real good about being an Alaska Native and being from Alaska, because I see a lot of people standing up for who they are up here. And if I ever leave Alaska, I'll feel like I'm missing out on something, because there's a lot going on up here that people all over the world are looking at. I feel real good about where we're going, but we should not rely on just one thing. There are a number of alternatives out there that we can work with. The land claims is just a tool, and that should be looked on as just a tool and not an answer. You know, we can use that, and that's how I feel. I'm going to stick with human resources. I really like working in with people and, you know, working with substance abuse and seeing people get control of their own lives that way, you know, and that's what I like. And I'm not sure if that's how I feel. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Sam. Thank you.
Ready?
Yes.
I'm Ellen Hayes. I was here last night for the formal presentation, and now I'm just me, a shareholder in Sciatica Corporation and in Sea Alaska Corporation so far. Some observations about our present culture, which the Alaska Native Statewide Women's Organization calls our present culture, pretty much dominated by ANCSA for 14 years, first in pursuit of the Act, and then the Act itself and the implementation of it, the organization of it, and then its operations. One of the principles of forming our corporation, regional corporation down here, I think started off wrong in the fact that the initial 18 members of the board were not selected by the people. There were no nominations made from each community. There was no ballot saying who we thought should be the beginners on the board. Rather, the Central Council, who had been the body pursuing the Act along with other regions, except for a couple, moved themselves over from directing the Central Council to become almost wholesale the directors of the corporation. That wasn't looked on by many of us as a respectful way to begin. There was a lot of resistance to it, and it was very political by the nature of the Native leadership in our own region. So pretty much on the outset, we were left out of the philosophy and the understanding of what the corporation was. And the board went sailing along without bringing the shareholders along with them with information that they could have had. One of the excuses I noted was that almost every time you were interested, the leadership would say, well, this is a corporation and we can't let information out. We'll be subject to being sued. So after a while, the shareholders became less and less interested in the regional corporation, sort of like scare tactics and a lot of intimidation rather than an open approach. So that's what I noticed at the beginning. It was far too political, because politicians among Native people were the ones who were involved in the Act to begin with. It was all political. And so those same individuals became the directors. And I think they just had a hard time changing hats from one of political leadership to another of pragmatic administration. and operations. That was a handicap, I think, that we have still struggling with. The other point that I wanted to make is, in some instances, the ANCSA is looked at as a native act and a native culture. But it isn't. It's a statewide culture. Almost without exception, everyone who has moved up to Alaska has moved here because of ANCSA in one way or another, directly or indirectly. And the interest in it differs widely. For instance, my grandchild, who is 13 years old, really has no interest in ANCSA. For good reason. It's not mentioned. It isn't a part of the education system at all. Maybe a class or two mentions the economy and corporations. The state of Alaska has never taken responsibility for bringing the people along in this state with what ANCSA is. It's a tremendously exciting social experiment. Not even the native corporations have dealt with the question of information and education in our education systems or outside of it that would have prepared us for the decision we will all make less than 10 years from now, when it becomes negotiable, when the corporations issue stock rather than the certificate. I attended a parent committee meeting on Indian education to see if they were receptive to teaching our new Indian condition, and that is ANCSA condition. Our condition has changed right along in the last 200 years. It continues to be dynamic. And I asked if ANCSA could be a part of the curriculum of Native education outside the classroom and in this program. And some of the parent committees didn't know what ANCSA was and asked me later on, what is that you were trying to say? So I think we haven't been reliant on ourselves to say, let's learn what we can about what this is and see how it works for us, whether or not we can persuade different leadership because of what we've learned. So we're all delinquent in Alaska in that aspect, education about ANCSA. The question about those youngsters who were born after the act was signed is not a burning issue with me. I don't think it changes their status at all. Perhaps they won't lose as much as some of the rest of us seem to be losing in our corporation. In that way, they're lucky, and they don't have to be burdened with the anxiousness and the suspicion and the lack of trust and the anger that comes from having to deal with our corporation, village corporation. And if we are Indian in the principle that was mentioned last night on self-reliance, especially down in this region, if indeed our principle is true today as it was in the past or could be, then it is we who should be responsible for our grandchildren, either personally or collectively. I look at it personally. That it isn't up to some politician to decide how my grandchildren will benefit or not from the Land Claims Settlement Act. One of the other observations I make, as many, many others do, and that is the act itself is a lawyer's dream. They're running into each other, crashing into each other with their briefcases, and they have a club all by themselves. They know the act legally. In Anchorage, if you go up to any of the lounges in the good hotels, they're sitting there talking together about the next million. They're really benefiting in Alaska because of ANCSA, and they'll continue to benefit. How we benefit is not going to be anywhere near directly as direct as the legal force is in Alaska. It's very hard to feel hopeful about it for me and my attitude based on too much high hopes. This region of Native people had high hopes from about the 1930s to the 1960s that their own settlement of the taking of the National Forest and Glacier Bay here would amount to what we used to jokingly say, Indian money. And we had high hopes that the amount of settlement would be $90 million. Then we heard it would be $87 million. Then we heard it was going to be $80 million. And then we heard it was going to be $57 million, and then we heard it was going to be $37 million, and in 1968 it was $7.5 million. And very limited use at that time, except for some small programs. Well, then when ANCSA was being talked about, again, there were high hopes, too high. The hopes are too high. The real world is quite different. The real world to me now, and I think I'm settled down to accept the real world much easier than I was a few years ago in the days of high hopes, that our corporations in America, in the free enterprise system, capitalism of America, our corporations are mediocre. They're not some of the best and listings in the measurement of corporations. We're in the business, but I know that it's going to take hard work and it'll be a long time and there won't be a big bag of money for everybody. So what I see in the future is that we have at least entered into capitalism, free enterprise, and the shareholder world. And we, I hope, won't get completely disenchanted by it, but to learn from our experience as shareholders in ANCSA and learn a lot more about money as a resource, how to handle money, how to invest it, the strengths of your investment, and the things that are weak about it. We need to know just as much about the faults of investment as we do on the assets. Any investment has its risks. I think we need leadership that'll level with us, saying what the risks are, rather than some kind of glorious report that keeps your hope up, and that's a false hope. It's phony as could be. But it's been going on now, a lot of phony reports with glorious words, for a long time. And what I prefer is plain talking, understanding the risks, and realizing the possibilities that aren't way out of line. We continue in ANCSA culture, and hopefully when the stocks are viable, we would still, because we are interested in education, we will prevail on the state and with our own resources to learn more about what it means to be in this business of corporations and make it work for us, so that we're not at last and again victims of something else. We can't always blame somebody else because we have become a victim of some circumstance. There is a chance now with the age that we're in, computers and understanding and all the opportunities around us, to become knowledgeable about our assets and then to use our good judgment rather than go by political leadership because we have no information. I think those are the comments that I wanted to make for the gathering of information that you're working on. And I appreciate the time that you're taking, your willingness to hear. It's a talent that I think we need very much. I'm not a good listener, but I really appreciate people who can listen. There's a lot to say, and you wonder if anybody's hearing, so I'm glad for this hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Mm-hmm. Hayes. Thank you very much. Maybe I should just announce that the commission went to the Women's Center at noon today, where the senior citizens, most of them Alaska Natives, were just completing their lunch, and we invited them to testify about the issues that we've been discussing here in the A&B Hall. And I should say, I'm sure this will be borne out by everyone who came with me, that we had a lively discussion, and all of their testimony has been taken down. I hope, Jeff, it's been taken down. And, that came about because when we were in Fairbanks, I was invited to come over and have lunch with the senior Native citizens. And they asked me to say something, and after I sat down, they all started to talk about ANCSA and about the history of their people, and I said to them, we should be getting this down on tape. So we decided that from now on, when we go to the senior citizens' centers, we'll ask them to speak for the record. I should say also that most of the places we go to, Eileen McLean or Mary Kenswick, who go in advance, usually go to the schools and the high schools and invite the high school students to make presentations to the commission, and we've done that in most of the villages we've been to. Customers this afternoon, we'll wait a few more minutes.
Well, I'm Winifred Reinhardt, Irma Reinhardt. I was born in Lake Bay, Alaska. And from my my Indian rights as far as land claim is concerned. When that issue came up, I thought my brother would register me in Wrangell. He never did. So I went to see Alaska, and they told me I'd have a birth certificate. And I was born under, what do you call, midwife, that was September 18, 1920. And then after I got the birth certificate and went up in person to the office of Robert Loach, or whatever you call him, see, Alaska is supposed to be in the land business, he told me I wasn't eligible, that there was a deadline. And I said, I never knew about the deadline, because I was living in Pelican at the time. And also in Pelican, I've been cheated out of estate and everything, letting people get by. And this land issue, well, I owned a home, I owned a boat, and I had a property on the hill, which I gave to a church after my auntie died. And the people there got together in a certain little group, and some of the white folks told me, didn't you make any claims? When I asked them, they said, no, we didn't have any meeting, they just kept it private. And there I went again. And I'm tired of being denied of my legal rights. Then in my estate, my husband was from Norway. Then they claimed, and I wasn't married to him because I was trying to get a divorce from my legal husband, who I, to this date, I don't know where he's at. And that lawyer that was handling the case, he wanted more money after he found Arnie bought me a home. And we were fishing in Pelican. So I just let things go. But now this came up, and I just wondered about, is there any such thing as a date line to say you're not eligible? That's awful.
Well, ma'am, even though you were born here, you were never enrolled as a shareholder in Sea Alaska or any other corporation, is that it?
No, I'm in Sea Alaska, but they've never helped me. And then after Arnie died, everyone called my husband. Well, and you had to wait for that estate. And that I couldn't shove ahead when it's dated on the calendar. You understand that? But and you, I didn't have a hold of the boat. And during this time, that fish permit came up. The limited entry. Then I went for a Supreme Court. And I was denied a living. Is that right? The only ways of making a living.
Oh, I see. You were enrolled in Sea Alaska, though.
I am a member of Sea Alaska. But then they denied me the rights to the land. But their delegates, they got taken care of it. That isn't fair. And that's been many years. Mm-hmm. And I'm just tired of as you say, being the goat. Low man on the totem pole is a good expression.
Yeah. Did you say that your husband had a permit for limited entry
he
fishing?
He didn't have one because it hadn't gone in effect when he died.
Oh, I see.
But I did buy a gear tax right here in Sitka. Before they settled the estate, before I got a hold of the boat, and I held the gear tax, but they would not issue it to me. They denied me and denied me. I went to Superior Court, then the Supreme. And I went up after Sea Alaska, Borbidge, and them wouldn't listen to me till I was through Byron. Then they wanted to use me for someone else. I got off my bar stool, let the others get off theirs. I quit drinking. I had no choice because they drank me out of bank account, home, and boat. I tried to hold on the boat long as I could. But I couldn't keep the upkeep with a broken hip. And I never asked anybody for help. I just got by on what I could. Mm-hmm. But I for once like to have something turn good my way. I don't know what's going to be in the future. But I can understand my brother not registering me.
Mm-hmm.
in Pelican, they weren't really, they started in on that. I moved out of there in 76. I had to sell my home because I couldn't get no work, and my estate money kept going out, and I couldn't. And one thing, I went before Victor Carlson, the judge. I've always been good-hearted. So I said, let these people in Norway have part of it, because he come from Norway. They turned around, they gave me 23,000, they gave Norway 37,000. But I had to vote in the house, which I had worked for. I could have said no, because they never helped him. I worked with him.
Well, that's you won the case then.
On what?
On the estate.
Well, I got to, I had no choice because I wasn't legally married. They wouldn't accept that there common law. And to this date, I still don't know where my legal husband is. I've had other lawyers ask, and missing persons. And I've tried myself when I was in Anchorage.
Well, I'm awfully sorry to hear about that, but there's nothing we can do about it here.
We're no, I'm not referring to that, but I'm just talking about all of the losses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't like to be losing all my life. I could have sued for this here hip, but I didn't believe in hurting others. But now I'm going to go back to Pelican. And I'm going to try to see if I can pull that king. I got a new hip.
Well, good luck.
I haven't got the expense of the boat. I go with someone else's. The upkeep is terrible. You just can't keep upkeep. You got to have a good job. The way the fishing industry is now. But that's been my life. But to be denied it by the state, that's terrible. They say they got Alaska Constitution. Why don't they let it be known to everyone, make it public? That's what the lawyers told me. I haven't seen it to the state. But our legislature is always changing. And our fisheries, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know the tides. They're just ruining it for people. There's so many boats being repossessed and everything. It's pitiful. And our people, they're being denied. I'm not the only one denied. I know of others that's been denied. Right in Yak, that's their livelihood. Just because they left there and didn't fish a certain year. They had to go somewhere else for work. Well, I don't know what they can do with it, but I spoke the best I know how. Maybe I don't use those $10 words, but that's it.
Yeah, well, you made yourself very clear. Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening.
Would any others present like to say something this afternoon? Where is the meeting tonight? What's the name of the... Gentlemen, let me thank you for coming this afternoon. We'll adjourn now, and there is a potluck supper tonight at the Sitka Community Association Hall at 5:30, and I believe that we're all invited to be there. I'm going anyway. And then the hearings will carry on right after the potluck supper, let us say around 7 o'clock. So if you wish to come tonight, be at the Sitka Community Association Hall at 7 p.m. So thank you again, and we'll stand adjourned now until then.
Maybe I should also tell you that we've been holding hearings all day today, and at noon we went to the Women's Center downtown, and there was a luncheon for senior citizens, etc., mostly Alaska Natives, and so we went there, and we gave the elders who were there at that lunch at the Women's Center today an opportunity to give their views about land claims in 1991 and all of these other questions, and it was a very good session. At least half a dozen of the elders spoke, and after starting off by telling the commission they didn't know anything about 1991, it turned out they knew all about it and had very decided views on the subject, so we were really glad that we went up to meet the elders and take their we can carry on this evening. I'm just taking this chair to my right by this microphone and saying your piece. Well, then we'll just be able to carry on informally and make sure everybody who's got something to say about this gets a chance to say it.
Of sovereignty and what you think of 1991. I guess we would have answered that easily because my name is Daisy Jones, excuse me for not writing, telling you, and I'm a shareholder of Shiataka. I was born here and I'm a Kagwantan, and my father, grandfather, our Kiksadi tribe people, and were here before the Russians. And I was very small when they started talking this land suit. There were some older people that never were mentioned. And when Governor Brady says, if you want folks wanting to take your troubles to the United States or Sioux or to the governor of Alaska, you folks have to organize, they told us. So they start to talk about organizing A and B. And my father and all my grandfather, they all were involved. They built. There was one up at the cottages, named different. Then they built one down here, the first A and B. This is the third one down here. And I was very small. They used to take me to meetings, sometimes in the winter on sled. We didn't have any telephones or no cars. They did things the hard way, but yet there were all good attendance, real lot of people, a lot of natives them days. And pretty soon they start to talk about land suit. But they said, you folks have to make peace with each other.
got to make peace with Wrangell. They had war in the old days, you know. So in order to get together, we had to make peace with Wrangell. And all the Kagwantan men went there. Not grandfather, Mr. Anna Hoots, and Augustus Bean, another from the House of Wolf and the House of Bear, and the Eagle House, Alexander's House, and all these other tribal houses, all mostly Kagwantan men. And one of my grandfathers was blind, and my grandmother had to go with him and take him by the hand. She didn't want to go. She thought she would be massacred down there. And told my grandmother, well, I'm going to put my best clothes on in case I come up against something. And if I die down there, you won't feel bad. I'll have all my jewel on and my good clothes. But lo and behold, it didn't get that way. They accepted them and gave them a big peace party. And for days, and given each other, adopting each other, and under Christianity and the new ANB, they all joined ANB in 1929. After that, the next year, they had the first land suit in Haines, and that's where they started to talk land suit. We lost too much, and all the traps took the fish. And all the gold was taken out of Juneau, and the black oil was, and the trees were being chopped down, and they were giving us orders. I went to hunt fish and all this. So we thought we better say something to Washington. So they finally went down there, and each time we raised all kinds of money. And some of the books I have, I have a whole bunch of it, and Herman has a bunch of it, where each person had to go and pay $1.50, and a family sometimes pay $9, $12, according to how many people are in a family. And some of them are died already, and I was surprised to go through this and Nellie Argon and people long gone, and Mr. and Mrs. Andrew Hope, and all some people. And I was looking at it today, and me and Mary Paul sit at the desk, and they give us the money, and we write down their name and how much they gave us, and give their receipts to them. And we never did get paid back for this.